to Vermont DEC. And with me here tonight, Tom Benoit from our Stormwater Management Program, Laura LaPierre from our Wetland Program, and Hannah Smith, our Associate General Counsel, working with us in the Watershed Management Division. And the purpose of the meeting tonight is about the 401 water quality certification that's been out on draft, and I imagine most of you have seen that. A public hearing was, or a public meeting, was requested by a group of folks, and that's what we're doing tonight. So we're here to hear your comments, and you can provide them in a number of different ways. As Laura was just saying, there's a sign-up sheet, and if you'd like to check a box on that sign-up sheet, we would welcome you to provide a verbal comment tonight. There's also a collection of papers up here. You can grab one of those and provide us a written comment if you'd like to leave the paper with us tonight. And we've extended the public comment period through this Monday, so you can also email comments in. So you can provide us with your comments on the proposed water quality certification draft in any of those ways. I want to turn it over to Hannah, who has some additional ground rules and information about the meeting tonight.
Sure. So just so everybody has the opportunity to speak, we're going to start by allowing those who have checked off and interest in giving verbal comments, giving them 3 minutes, and presumably we'll have extensive time at the end if additional people decide that they want to comment. I made this handy time 30-second card, but I can warn you, and we're getting close to the 3 minute mark. And to make sure everyone does have a chance to speak, I appreciate it if you don't go over the 3 minutes when we start. Again, we should have opportunity for everyone to speak. That's the purpose of this meeting, is to allow you guys to give us feedback. As Pete mentioned, there are comment cards if you want to submit written comments, and we'll be accepting comments through for the next week as well. Please get your comments to us by the end of the day on Monday, March 6th. And you can send us those via email or in the mail. And when we are able, we will answer procedural questions that you have for us. There are technical staff that worked on the preparation of this application here also, if there is a question that they might be able to provide additional information on, they may speak up as well. And I should also mention that certain stormwater issues related to the project are currently under appeal, and our ability to comment on those issues may be limited by the ongoing litigation, but we are providing a full written response to all the comments that we receive following this public comment period. The other thing to be aware of is that this meeting is being recorded just so that we have a record of these proceedings. The information on the table, including the 401 and the application, are available on our website, and it's hard to give directions on the website verbally, but
so if you go onto the Vermont Wetlands website, we have a link to public notices that'll take you to the correct page. On there will be the application, including all of the site plans, like what we have up here today, as well as the draft 401.
And the only other thing to mention is that, again, we appreciate you all being here and providing feedback, and please keep your comments respectful to the other people in the room. I will just start by calling the names of those folks who have checked off their interest in giving verbal comments. And if you don't mind standing up and coming up to the front so that we are sure the microphone captures your comments, that would be appreciated. So it looks like, and I apologize if I butchered your name, Marilee Lovell.
I don't have comments so much as questions.
Okay.
So my first question is, how was it decided that this is a Class 2 wetland? Was it from a map, or did somebody actually go out and walk on it and take measurements and see how much water there was? And the second question is, Hannaford's plan was approved with a 25-foot setback, and it was turned around in the court because it's supposed to have a 75-foot setback. Does that affect your wetlands approval, your stormwater approval at all?
Yeah, as far as the wetland classification goes, there was a
process called wetland determination process that took place a while back where the agency, myself, and others went out to the site, reviewed the wetlands. We received a petition from the applicant with greater, more information about the wetland and the functions and values that it may be providing to determine whether or not those were suspended in function. And there was a public comment period and public meetings associated with that classification, and the determination was that it was classified.
And I can speak to the 75-foot setback. So basically, when you get a stormwater permit, it doesn't negate the right that you have to get all of the permits removed to the local zoning order has to be. So that may become a local zoning issue where I don't know whether they're keeping So if the local zoning board decides that it is a 75-foot setback, then there could potentially be the need for them to revise for this one larger.
Okay. Joanna White?
I believe sometimes pictures are worth 1,000 words, so I'm going to say some for you. Words, that is. These pictures were taken about 3 or 4 years ago. I believe it was like a 24-hour storm at the time. And it shows the flooding that occurred on 116 adjacent to the culvert, a box culvert that goes under 116. That culvert was getting pretty much overwhelmed. And should debris get in the way of the water that's coming through it, it would, according to what I read on about the FEMA 100-year flood, that they have written up, that it would virtually overwhelm 116 because there's a 34-foot rise in or level of 116 that could quickly be overcome with this kind of, an even bigger storm than this. So, yeah. And I'd be happy to share this with you. I mean, if you would like to have digital photographs of it to your record, that would be, I would be happy to provide it.
Okay. So
that,
is that on the Dolly property?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it is. Yeah. And you can see these are the
DEC is often talking about green infrastructure, the importance of enhancing and protecting green infrastructure, which is a naturally occurring features on the land that provide functions and values, often to deal with stormwater, groundwater, and other issues. So while DEC is encouraging us to identify, protect, and enhance, it looks like in this instance you guys are taking, 4.5 acres at minimum of green infrastructure, and you guys are filling it, rendering it, just no longer functioning. So I guess I have a question. It seems like conflicting sort of strategies on the part of DEC. And then secondly, I'm just wondering, feeling of the experts. So we have this wetland, and I understand that it's sort of hydrologically disconnected. It's kind of been isolated. They have that canal running around it. There's not as much water going into it that probably used to go into it. So what is the potential for restoring functions and values and enhancing functions and values in that wetland, which, so it's not only the green infrastructure, but it's really in a critical location that could do a lot of good for Hinesburg as we're dealing with water quality issues.
Okay.
Thank you.
Opportunities for wetland restoration throughout Heinsberg. I believe it's a very, the landscape has a lot of past agricultural practices that are still, areas that are still fielded and maybe aren't producing anymore that could become more of a wetland. I think that there's always potential to enhance or restore wetlands. And in the case of this parcel, the landowner is wanting to do something else. So that's what we have to evaluate for this project is what the person is proposing. Certainly if someone was proposing restoration, we'd be having a conversation as well.
So I'm not sure if you had a question about green infrastructure or if you were saying the actual wetland or green infrastructure. Were you asking if they were going to do any sort of actual?
No. So, you know, I'm saying in terms of green infrastructure, I know there's that term sort of has a couple of different definitions. I was referring to the naturally existing features on the landscape, which that is one of them. Like I said, it seems to be sort of critically located, you know, to deal with some of our stormwater issues. And so it seems like sort of a lost opportunity to take advantage of that.
Catherine Goldsmith.
I don't have a whole lot to say. I just, in the 7 years since this project was first proposed, I think attitudes around how we should be taking care of clean water in the state have changed somewhat. The state's under a requirement to clean up Lake Champlain and other large lakes, and every time we talk about the state budget, there's no money. But everyone in government is looking for money to clean up the lakes, and that's not easy to find. And I just feel like this is a fairly good-sized parcel, and this project should be looked at very carefully by all the different departments at ANR in terms of, as Bob was saying, as this is a natural resource, and filling it with, you know, I think it's 2,090 truckloads of fill over a 3-week period seems like a drastic change in our landscape here in Heinsberg. And residents have spent decades trying to plan to maximize our natural resources and take care of the landscape. And unfortunately, this has turned into a battle against a grocery store, which we don't have anything against grocery stores, but it seems like this resource is not being adequately respected. And where the state is at a point in time where maybe we should be trying to slow down new impervious surface rather than taking all the steps we can, or the agency can, to actually approve a project, which doesn't seem wise in this space, in this town. And the residents, from the very beginning of this process, have identified this as a wetland in our layman's terms, and didn't think that it could support such a building, and many of us still don't think it can. Thank you.
Thank you for coming. I mean, almost no one does. Thanks
for this opportunity. The cleanup of Lake Champlain is going to cost the state of Vermont millions of dollars each year for the foreseeable future, and we're, as others have said, having a very hard time finding that money. To keep the cost from going even higher, we have to do all that we can to stop polluting the lake via its tributaries. The Loch Hissen wetland sends clean, naturally filtered groundwater to Patrick Brook, even in the middle of summer. And from Patrick Brook, it goes on to the La Platte River and then to Lake Champlain. If the Hannaford store were to be built, that wetland function would be lost. The updated computer modeling shows that with the project built, the post-development discharge in the 10-year storm would exceed the pre-development discharge to Patrick Brook, causing more scour of its stream banks and releasing more phosphorus to the water. This, I don't think, is allowed under your rules. The applicant doesn't claim otherwise, but simply argues that AMR told them it was acceptable to eliminate existing treatment under older regulatory schemes. The applicant further claims that there will be new stormwater recharge via a 200-foot swale, but that swale is already saturated and part of the wetland. So you and ANR are being asked to unwind a set of bad decisions, decisions that appear even less sound with more evaluation. I would ask that you consider how the existing natural system is likely to outperform a contrived one that looks worse with each revision. For the applicant, when one problem seems solved, another pops up. What works in the 10-year storm doesn't work for the 100-year storm, and vice versa. Turning a wetland into a swale and calling it better is no answer either. I therefore ask you to please reconsider your agency's prior evaluation. We are talking, and many of us are talking here, about green infrastructure, how to create some new infrastructure, and how to identify and preserve what we have. The Lot 15 wetland provides green infrastructure that the town needs and that Lake Champlain needs. I think we all agree that prevention is less costly than remediation. You still have the opportunity to do the right thing. Please do not affirm a bad design with a water quality certification. Thank you.
Bill Mark.
Hi. My question is really more general about wetlands, and based on the fact we've had some other history in Hinesburg with the ice on the pipeline in Quebec Park, and I have some deep concerns because of my involvement in there on the Conservation Commission and our management of the Crag, and I know my angst tonight is shared by a lot of people here. And that is our reliance on ANR, well placed, in protecting our wetlands. Because, as you know, if it wasn't for Bob Hyams, who spoke a little earlier, Vermont Gas would have trenched through the most valuable part of the wetlands in our park. And ANR relied, as I understand, entirely on the reports of Vermont Gas. Well, they had all these big shot experts who apparently didn't actually go out and look at them. Whatever happened, it was only because of the citizens' group that we got some mitigation. Not everything we wanted, but some mitigation. And it's looking in Hinesburg like it's the citizens group that have to take the lead. And we want more involvement. I think the Public Utilities Commission is beginning to pay attention to our group. Because the other agencies that are, I thought, were supposed to look out for the public interest are not doing that. There's, for some reason, a lot of respect for the big business interests here and not much for our environment. And I realize I'm not addressing specific issues, but I am addressing a real concern that I think most of the people here probably share. And I don't expect you to be able to answer that tonight, or should probably, but I would like you to think about it.
I'd like to respond to that, so thank you for your comment. The concern of reviewing the work of experts, and that's something that our program does on a regular basis. On really large projects, may not be able to get to every piece of the wetland, but for this project, we did walk the boundary of the wetland, went to it multiple times. I believe I may have actually been on site with some of you who are here tonight. So
I want to assure you that we have been on the site and looked at this specific wetland.
All right, well, your response did actually remind me that, as I understand from your conversations with Bob Hyams, he had promised that a thorough investigation of other sites in the state along the pipeline would be done independently by ANR, and this is supposedly should have been done last spring, and we have never received any notice that such a thing was done, and there's been plenty of evidence coming out since that the wetlands they had gone through, that they have done improper and probably unsafe burials in the pipeline, and that's being litigated now. So I don't know what happened with that, but that was something you and Bob Hyams apparently were involved with.
Okay. That's beyond the scope of this comment, but I think we can follow up with you.
My name is Renata Parks.
Sorry,
I have trouble hearing, so I'm going to try and beam to the audience because you can hear, but we can't. And I think if you're going to have a public meeting, it would be helpful for you to think about the audience too, not just to tape. Because I don't think how many people have had trouble hearing.
Please let us know if you can't hear something.
We can't hear.
Okay.
We can't hear. So, I live on Pond Road, just one block up from the Commerce Street and the Panicksville intersection. So it's CVU Road and Pond Road. I'm a mix out of the CVU campus. And I said this before in another hearing, and I was asked to repeat my comment, that basically when Hinesburg was built on water, water made this town work. There were lots of factories along Patrick Brook. All of that is important. And when it rains, and I'm not talking about a 100-year-old, you know, 100-year event. I'm talking about every time it rains in Hinesburg, we have a river coming down Pond Road past our house. And the river, the water goes into our yard. It stands behind our mailbox. And I'm a block up from the wetlands that we're thinking about. And the southwest corner of our property is wet most of the time. It doesn't stop. CVU has had a constant problem with the baseball fields and the other fields because there's standing water in there, and they have trouble using the land for sports events. So some of those fields are too wet to use, and we're not talking about unusual rains. We're talking about normal seasonal rain. You can see the volume of water that's coming north of us when you go past the brook that is alongside the cemetery. It's quite full. And you can see the water on the field behind the post office and the bank. If you walk in there, it's foggy. And the canal is full now. And this hasn't been unusual. The canal is quite full. I haven't seen it myself because I've only been here since 2001, but I am told that there used to be ducks on that property that we are considering building a Hannaford on. The other problem that I think it would raise is the congestion on 116, the congestion on Mechanicsville Road, and when school is in session and the morning traffic and the evening traffic, and I'm not just talking about the school traffic with 1,400 students plus faculty, we have a lot of traffic on Pond Road that goes into Mechanicsville Road and down there, and I think that Hannaford is not considering that on our road, which would lead to that site.
Thank
you for your time.
I'm going to mess this name up also. Elaine Schwab?
As Renata's husband, knowing the same lot, I'm talking about two bits of experience, one immediate right now. She mentioned the southwest corner of the property. It illustrates the flow of water down the hill that almost, I would testify, is incessant year-round. What happens down there, when I moved in, we thought, oh yeah, that's a septic tank. Yeah, well, I've lived with septic tanks. I know what they smell like. It's not a septic tank problem. It's still wet. It's wet year-round. That's experience number one. Experience number two is I would caution being sure that we are handling the water that's handled by that wetland spot that is going to be the site of the Hannaford property. That you're going to be able to cope with the water, I question. I grew up in a building family. Many times we had to deal with water in basements of homes just built. You never know where water is going to go. The last house I lived in over there in Pressburg, we had to build our, we were very fortunate. We raised our site about 10 feet and stopped at a minimum depth for the garage, for the basement. But the people on all around otherwise were still having water problems in spite of all they did. So that's my second question. I would hesitate to go along with recommendations that the water handled by the wetland will be handled by the proposed solution. That's my caution.
So far, this is the end of the list of those who checked off their interest in giving verbal comments, but we do have the room for another hour, and if there are additional comments or questions, we are here. Ask your attention.
Sure. I'm going to try to be the only opposing view. So, just in the sense of, my name is Tom Suffolk. I own the property across the street from the proposed Hannaford location. So, I've been in Commerce Park. I've owned a piece of property in there for over 20 years. I've been in the area since the early 90s. So, I'm well aware of the area that we're talking about. Has direct exposure to it on a daily basis, all week long, for over 20 years. So, for what it's worth, I can tell you that there's water going by in Patrick Brook, but if you want to talk about wetlands, the wetlands that were behind me over on the NRG property are a much bigger deal than the tiny little piece of land that's over in Commerce Park. In terms of what this town's plan was originally, it's Commerce Park. It was named that for a reason. It's where the commerce is. The post office is there. Estes Hardware or Aubuchon's now is there.
you know, the veterinarian's there. There used to be a health clinic in there. There's the CVS pharmacy there. There's a convenience store there. All of the commerce in the town is in that park. That was the town's plan. That was what they had scoped for. That's what the town board had designated it as. To put a grocery store in there, absolutely 100% makes sense. Where it is now, where it's been for decades, up in the middle of town, is causing more traffic problems and more congestion than any other plan would ever cause. I'm apparently the only person that came here in favor of this plan, but we know dozens of people that just, they work all day and they have jobs and they have kids and they can't make it to these meetings. So I'm going to try and encourage them to write you all a little note and let you know there's another side of this in the town as the size is being represented here. I'm all in favor of green land and wetlands and all that stuff, but to have it in the middle of your commerce park doesn't make any sense at all. The fact that it's designated a Class 3 wetlands, I totally support. There's nothing in there except mud and muck. I mean, and that's, you know, in the spring, and by summer it's all dried out, and they used to go through and brush hog it. Matter of fact, NRG used to be over there all the time setting up the antenna poles, and they did that for decades too. Nobody raised any issues when NRG was over there, and now all of a sudden it's a big issue because Hannaford wants to go there. Is it the wetland they don't like, or they don't like the business that's going there? There's a big distinction between those two things. In terms of flooding in that canal and everything else, I've never seen it. In the entire time I've been here, I've never seen it. I've never seen the canal overflowed. I've never seen water rushing down. I've never seen... The only thing I've ever seen flooded in this town is where they built that whole entire housing area out in back of CVS and back of Giro's. That flooded a number of times. Matter of fact, I've seen water all the way up through those homes, all that whole floodplain, all the way up to the road where Giro's is. So Giro's, matter of fact, I know Giro's have had water in their shop in the middle of summer. So you want to talk about floods and floodplains, that's a much bigger issue than that little section in Commerce Park has ever been. Thank you.
I wasted some of my time by saying we couldn't hear, and I couldn't hear all of what was said this time either. But the last point I wanted to make was when my husband had his injury, we did a lot of walking on that path along the canal because it's straight. A lot of sidewalks have, you know, the bumps, and that was a good place. It's not going to be aesthetically very pleasant to walk on the back end or the side end of a building that's raised up. You know, it's pleasant there. There are a few trees and bushes, and it's a nice place to be if you need to walk for whatever reason or you want to walk. But if you change the character of that by building up a commercial building that is out of keeping with the other buildings in the area, it will not be pleasant. Thank you.
For those of you who haven't, I'm sorry if you can't hear everybody's comments that well, but I just want to remind you that we will be providing a written response. So if you haven't already, please put down your email address on the sign-in sheet, and then you'll be getting a written response and a summary that summarizes everything.
That's exactly what we're trying to do, is to capture the comments on the tape. We'll then reflect those comments back in writing along with our responses to them. So I'm sorry tonight's clunky in terms of the acoustics, but everything that's said will be reflected in writing, and as well the responses. And as Laura said, we'll send that out. It'll be on our webpage for anybody to look at, but we can also email anybody that wants to leave us their email address. We'll make sure you can get a copy of that as well.
I'm Andrea Morganti, and I just wanted to provide some context. I've lived across the street from the Canal Meadow Lot 15 and that entire Commerce Park for over 40 years. And it started out as a, when I moved there, it was a pasture for the cows that were next door, and they would walk across the bridge. It was a very wet area, and so the cows would go out there, and when it was dry enough, they would hay it. I think it's important to know the context of the evolution of Commerce Park, that at the time it was being considered for commercial development was just around the time when we were beginning to understand the real nature of wetland rules, and there was this classification called prior converted, and I think much of the development that happened in the mid to late 80s, early 90s was on what was considered prior converted ag land, and I think what is was thought of as a good plan when Commerce Park was created, was without the understanding of the real value of wetlands and the fact that prior converted was agricultural land, and it can go back to being and having its functions and values as wetlands. We have now come to understand that, and that we no longer have that exemption of prior converted. So I think it's really important to understand that context, and that every development that has happened in Commerce Park has required fill, because you are filling in a wetland. And we have learned nationally that we are filling in our wetlands, and that has contributed to the loss of groundwater, to pollution, and to increased flooding in places most recently we've seen in Texas. So I think that really what we're saying here is that this wetland has been degraded by deferred other development within Commerce Park. And it's time for us to recognize those past mistakes. We maybe didn't know as much as we know today about the value of wetlands. And there is an opportunity on Lot 15 for it to be restored, for its functions and values to be restored. Over the years, we have seen and heard about various developments that were being proposed for Lot 15, and the consultants who were hired to do the evaluations for potential applicants. Came back and said, this is a wetland, they're not going to get a permit. A number of years went by, and that that lot stayed vacant, and the town planning commission and the select board recognized that it was not of value probably for commerce as much as it had originally been zoned, and that there would be a value there of having it as open land, and it was placed on our official map. With the intention that wetland would stay, because we had come to understand as a community that wetland functions and values can come back when we leave it alone. When those ditches that had been previously put there fill in with sediment and it begins to restore itself. There have been ducks out there. There are herons that mostly are in the canal, but it is habitat. And there's unusual sand filter under a layer of sand throughout that property that does function to allow some infiltration to happen. So it does have some unique characteristics. And I think, just because we've made mistakes in the past doesn't mean that we can't start doing things right. And instead of us having death by a thousand cuts, let's do the right thing and recognize its value.
Engineers, the system that they want to have, what if that fails? What if we have a 100-year flood? What, you know, is this really good engineering to have a catch location that largely was or won't become a problem? I was questioning the right place for any kind of question. What I think a lot of us are wrestling with, which is an issue of scale. So my concern is that engineering and modeling and statistics are all subject to manipulation. And people who have a goal that they want to achieve and select which statistics and which modeling and which engineering will be most beneficial. But I think many of us are here because we know intuitively that this project is out of scale with the surrounding area. And by out of scale, I don't mean visually and aesthetically. I mean this project proposes to pave over an entire section of land that's being used to absorb water in that area. And everyone knows it. Intuitively. So it may be hard to argue against modeling and engineering, but I think we all know there's a lot of water that comes through there. The Patrick Brook, the canal, the drainage of all of the hills that surround that area. You feel it, you watch it. There is too much water to pave over that whole thing and expect that ditches and swales will somehow deal with that and make it go where? Where will it go? So I just, my concern is we look to you to defend our intuition that this is out of scale and what they're proposing in terms of engineering and modeling is not going to play out. And these ditches and swales are not going to be sufficient to deal with enormous volume of water that we all know is there.
Matt Gordon, and I have critical questions, and whether you can answer them now or refer me to someone who's interested. And apologies if it's in the chat, I'm going to look up. I'm interested in what happens now. You receive comments by the member of the press, and then what happens? Are there meetings? Is there a meeting? Are there conversations? What
the next thing that happens, so we receive all the comments, and as Hannah said when we started, we've extended the comment period through Monday, close of business, so the 5th. We'll receive all those comments, we'll write them all up, and then we'll provide answers to each of the questions, each of the comments that were provided. We'll distribute that to all of everyone that's here that leaves their email address, plus we'll put it up on our website. A decision will be made as to if there are changes necessary in the 401, if we should issue the 401, and then if that 401 is issued with or without changes, that then starts a 30-day clock and appeal clock. So that 401, just like other permits that we issue, can be appealed during that 30-day window of time. And if it is appealed, then we go off into the realm of the appeal and litigation around that. As Hannah mentioned earlier, the stormwater permit that was issued for this project is currently under review. And hearings will be coming up on that in May. Yeah, so.
Thank you. So the decision will be made. Who makes the decision?
It's a department, actually an agency-wide decision that, you know, it involves the Department of Environmental Conservation, our department, the Department of Fish and Wildlife, and it's an after decision of the secretary of the agency.
I'm sorry.
It's an after decision of the secretary of the agency. The 401 is issued out of our division, out of the watershed management.
So is that a
Well, yes. I mean, we put the 401 out on draft, and we invited comments. One of the comments we received is, can you have a public meeting on this, which is tonight.
Right.
We're doing a public meeting. We're still accepting comments. So that's the public process associated with our permit.
But the public is there are the minutes of the actual decision making?
No, there are no minutes of the decision making. It is an agency deliberative process. So. The 401, and I should have said this to begin with, the 401 is our certification of the Army Corps wetland permit. So the so-called 404, the Army Corps, the federal U.S. Army Corps permit for the wetland project, for the Hanover project in the wetlands. We are certifying whether or not that permit that the Army Corps is issuing water quality.
Right.
So I should have been more clear.
No, that's fine. Thank you. I was just trying to determine whether the actual decision making, whether that's an open and transparent, how is making that decision and how is it made? So that's not really open and transparent.
Well, we don't have people come in to participate in the actual decision making, but we try to be transparent in putting out the draft 401, having a meeting, hearing people's concerns, making decisions, and then finally issuing. And then if people are unhappy at that point, then there is the appeal process. So I mean, it's our records that we deliberate with are available. So I'm not sure if I'm answering your question or not.
No, I think you have. I just wanted to know, it would be so interesting to understand how the decision is made, what are the facts and the evidence.
Right.
People are suing over.
Well, we have our rules and regulations, and we have to make decisions based on those rules and regulations. So, and that's the way it should be, right? Whether or not we like a project or don't like a project really doesn't come into it. It's a set of wetland rules, state water quality standards, stormwater management rules. So we evaluate all of the aspects of a project against that set of rules and regulations. And if it satisfies those rules and regulations, we issue a permit. If it doesn't satisfy, then the project has to be modified or the permit could be denied. So, I mean, each project and its component parts are judged against the standard set of rules and regulations. And we have those for stormwater, for wetlands, for the water quality standards. So, I mean, that's what we have to judge against.
So that is what we will see.
It meets this criteria for these reasons. It meets those criteria for those reasons, right? If the decision is made to issue, then that would be the basis for it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So that is what
would be up to you. My name is Jim Dumont. I do want to address the process. I'm the one that asked for this public hearing, and I didn't come planning to say anything, but frankly, I can't control myself. I do need to respond to some of the things that have been said and the questions that have been asked. So we have a track record. The DOE agency has a track record in the community with this project. And as far as the process goes, it's not a good one. First, let's talk about the threat of the wetlands permit. We had a hearing. People took time off from their home, work, they came in, they testified, and we heard about, for example, the canal walk, the history of the canal walk, which is so important to the community. The hearing closed, the record closed, and then we rendered the decision. It turned out that after the record closed, after the hearing closed, we went back to the developer, Mr. White, and we spoke to him about what you had heard in the hearing, and Mr. White disagreed with what had happened at the hearing. And the official decision you issued relied on what Mr. White said after the hearing and after the record was closed to grant the permit. That's not a healthy process in this case. It's not a respectful process. Then we had the stormwater permit, the recent stormwater permit, that's now on appeal to the Environmental Court. The same thing happened. We submitted two people in know, they did a proverbial bake sale. They raised the money to pay for the expert. The expert submitted a detailed expert critique of what Mr. O'Leary did. The comment period closed. And then the agency met with Mr. O'Leary and asked him to rebut our comments. And then the permit was issued based on Mr. O'Leary's meeting after the comment period was over. So that's two strikes. And I'm sorry it sounds on behalf of the community that people are better, but they are. And we hope this isn't the third strike. Thanks, Becky.
I have a question that sort of follows on that. I would like to know why, if you can explain to me, why is it that when there is a project proposed, the people, the citizens of the town, can deny access to the site? Why can't the Agency of Natural Resources require developers to allow access to a site that the developer wants for building on? As a general comment, we don't have the ability to allow access to private property. If you're not, I'm saying why can't you say that it is necessary for people on both sides of the issue to have access to the site?
Yeah.
No, I remember that and I understand that. And again, we don't have that legal ability. So I
So it's just up to the goodness of their heart that Hannaford has said you can come on your site and the landowners say you can come on your site and
it's my understanding that's the law. I mean, you probably disagree with that. I don't know, but I'm not aware that we have the legal ability to have the private owner allow other people on.
That's part of the reason why we ask so much of our application has photographs of the site. It has a detailed functions and values checklist that the applicant has to fill out, and all of the information for the decision that was made was in our application, as well as the rest of the stuff in our record. Like we have, I took some notes from that site visit, and those notes can be requested and made available to everyone. I know it's shy of being able to allow everybody onto the parcel, but we do want to give people the information that they need in order to survive thoughtful comments. And for the wetlands piece, I feel like the photographs and information about the functions and values assessment was really helpful information that people can use and maybe even be more helpful than a site visit. I don't know, but I look at that information and I found that really helpful as part of my review.
I'm learning how to walk all over again. Two things I left out of what I wanted to say. I relied on my testimony about our southwest corner on the basis of my smell. That's a little spooky. The real basis is that we connected to the sewer 7 years ago, and it's still there. And the other thing was, when I said, be cautious about knowing just where water's going to go, what's going to happen to it. That's my builder's, my father's experience as a builder, and my brother as well. We're all in the same, all been in the same business. You never know exactly where it's going to go. So I'd be cautious about that. Expert, reassure you, it worked. Thank you.
Catherine Goldsmith. I had meant to reference the expert testimony, which I know has already been submitted to all of you, but I thought since we're being taped. So our hydrogeologist for responsible dose science for this Andre Cerisco. And I just want to, I'm not going to read the report, but because you mentioned the rule book, I just wanted to read just this one little piece for other people in the audience that may not have seen it. Issue number one, overbanked flood protection treatment standards, 10-year peak discharge, and Andre Cerisco, who's a hydrogeologist, says, sections violated, impacts to stream resources, impacts to lake resources, impacts to physical, chemical, and biological water conditions, and impacts to recreational and land uses. So, I mean, I say this just because it does seem like you can have experts and you can have differing opinions. And I think sometimes the agency maybe doesn't have the resources to actually consider both points of view. And I think there's been hydrocad modeling with, I'm not even sure if the agency has that software or the manpower to run it. But our experts have come up with, have run the same data and come up with different results.
Okay.
Thank you.
This has been mentioned before, but we have to consider again that Hannaford Corporation certainly is aware that they're dealing with the wetlands, because they're bringing in 38,000 cubic yards of steel to raise that area 5 feet, and they're going to have to do retaining walls as well. So, and when we were on the site with Judge Walsh a while back, we were all wearing boots. And if we weren't, our feet were wet. I was walking around in 4 inches of water. So, just to this point. And, well, one more. My father used to say that an expert, anybody's an expert who's 50 miles from home. And the Hannaford Corporation is 3,000 miles from home. And there's been so much here talk tonight from citizens who live here. So we do have a sense this environment. You do see water flowing. And this is crucial. And I think you really need to go to bat for us, for the wetlands, for the citizens of this town. Urgently. Yeah. And I was shocked to hear what Jim DeMont has said about how our testimony was handled. I was shocked to hear that. The two strikes that he mentioned. So I urge you to consider that process. And we are our own experts in many ways. We do live here and we love this environment. And I know we're divided in many ways. There is an intuitive sense about the land, the soil.
Thank you. Sir. My name is Peter Irv. I think everybody in the room agrees that we don't want to see any degradation of the water that's coming off that property. And my understanding of this process is that's what it's intended to do. And the stormwater control that they do are supposed to, I think, emulate pretty close development situations. And I would hope that the same systems are emulating the water quality system somewhere. I just, an observation and then a couple of questions. The observation is I have just, again and again, when I see that treatment is supposed to happen in the small water sources, north, west, and then north, the Patrick Brook, 8 feet wide, so that was designed as a water transport system to dry out common parts that can be built. That was the whole purpose of it.
and now it's going to be modified somewhat so it is going to be the transport system for not only that lot, but the lot to the west where Hero is part of that comes in, part of what Abishan is back there. There's a lot of other places that jump into that. So you've got this balancing act of what was a transport system, you now turn it into a treatment system. And I just look at the rate of flow through that system, and think, how in the hell can it suck the salt out of it? How can it suck the oil out of it that goes by their catchment basin, et cetera, et cetera? And the engineers and all of us are going to fight and try to come up with some kind of system. And it's an indicated guess whether it works or not. But how do you tell whether it works? And if it doesn't, here's your problem. Is it you guys, because you gave the permit and put the owner's walk, Patterson? Or is it the town that then has to develop more wetland somewhere else to treat what may be going here? What are the controls after everybody takes their best guess?
I heard two questions in there. So the first one sounds like you're talking about the entire park system.
Well, the entire park system is drained into that soil that they are now taking over to move to the street. I'm not talking about the big part of the park. I'm just talking about the parts of the park to utilize the same soil to drain and whatever creek. And the most amazing places are going to be developed later. I don't know, they may put something in the same soil.
So they're proposing now to put a swale in front of their property, the front of lot 15 versus the lot between lot 10 and 11. That's what you're talking about.
I'm assuming they're still using the same swale between dark soil and all the time.
No, they're layered.
The swale between the ocean and the dark soil property is still used. What they changed is they wouldn't add or extend that swale on the dark soil. Dark soil, they can't do that. They're adding a swale on the northern border of Lutton. But they're still using the swale between Oshon and dark soil to get the colon.
So the swale he's talking about is part of the actual common park system. So that's always going to be in use with water flowing through it. They are proposing a separate draft swale in front of the lot 15 for treatment of water quality treatment for the
north, is it like the northern boundary that you made of?
Yes, of the proposed lot basis, yes. So that was the first question I heard.
Okay, so let's just understand that. So that's the treatment swale then, which is the northern portion, water flowing north, not the water. It's on the northern portion where water flowing west.
So there's, when you say treatment, there's several different treatment functions going on here. So the grass swale you're talking about is for meeting one of the requirements of the stormwater manual, the water quality treatment criteria. The other portion of the treatment is the storage chambers underneath the parking lot, the MCCD and CCAD. And so some of that was bypassed, and I think that's the swale you're talking about. You're not talking about the one between Starkstar, the one on the...
We're still using.
Right, but that the water would still flow through that every...
And that's part of the treatment,
which is
Peter's point. That swale between
Darkstar
and
Ocean
is part of the proposed treatment.
The actual, well, and again, without getting into what we're considering treatment, what's being treated in the actual park system, water will flow through the grass swale in front of lot 15 for one criteria. And then the storage chambers will address some other stormwater criteria. At this point, that will bypass another swale on the opposite side going straight through. So I'm not sure if I'm answering your question, but there's several different treatment options going on, and I think you're talking about an older revision where they proposed treatment in one of the swales of the common park permit, and they proposed retrofit to that, which they are no longer doing in this way versus another swale.
Okay, I understand that. My question still is it just seems to be the length of that swale and the amount of the northern water and where they're creating a new one out of Portland area is quite similar to the water, which is not having anything else to do. But I think it's
boggles my mind is to strip all the salt that's coming up out of that parking lot, all the oil that's going to be stripped out, and everything else before it leaves that bunker. And maybe this is the end of the standard, you just can't do anything about it, but I wish you said today, what are you going to do with that trail?
Okay. So what you're talking about is being proposed to be treated in the ABS water quality unit. So for each of the storage chambers, I'm just making it a whole bunch of loose here, but there's two sets of storage chambers with water quality units proposed for either side of the parking lot. Into those units, they have a separator, which is the proprietary percentage is 80% per flush, so you're going to get most of your oil, your salt. Again, they don't really target that. They target close to solid oil debris, so they will be addressed before it actually gets to be that grass creek whale.
Yeah.
Okay.
So if they don't target salt, then you will permit target salt and say that they have to use only a limited amount for it.
The stormwater regulations, they don't really target salt. If we don't target salt in the stormwater regulations, it's a fluke.
My name is Dennis Bullock. I've been in town since 73, and how do you find here with most of these people? Because I have a little concern about this. This is the first I've heard, the one that concerns me the most, which is these tanks for treating the major glut of the water that's coming off of the tape with the impermeable lot. And you talked about solids and oil and other substances, I'm assuming, are being treated in these holding tanks. Or what are these tanks? And how does that separation work? I mean, when I was pouring through the comments and then responses from the engineers today, that seemed like a really big gap to me. You know, what does that actually look like?
So the stormwater will flow off the parking lot in that basin. Wastewater will be directed towards one of two water storage units underneath the parking lot.
Yeah,
for storage
chambers. That I understand.
Yep. Prior to the water entering those storage chambers, they go through an ABS water quality unit, which is targeted with moving what they call perf flush, which will be the majority of your sediments, oil, and debris. So it's like a pre-treatment before it actually goes into the storage tank, which one they'll be being contained there for volume and debris that control rate.
Mm-hmm. And this is solely for the impermeable surface.
Correct.
Yeah. And is that taking the water off of the roof of the building itself?
Yes. And again, I'm oversimplifying it. There's water going to other areas as far as the, I guess I'm not saying it very well. Rooftop will be going to certain grass swales. Some of it will be disconnected. Some of it will be routed to the system. So there's
parking lot stuff is more of a concern to me than the roof. So
the parking lot will be all collected through catch basins and put to that system as dried up again.
So as they discharge into the swales, what happens when you have a really huge rain event? Who's the next property over?
Right. So storms greater than the water quality storm will bypass the actual grass swale and will be routed around on the other side of, is that a Dark Star property as well? I can't remember.
Yeah,
there's two lots, and there's another swale between them going to a detention structure as part of the Thomas Park.
Okay.
There's a lot of questions I have on that. Wetland. The downstream pollution issue is really big, and I don't see how it can make a real difference in the long run. Is there a changeable component in those tanks that helps with filtering of these chemicals, oils, etc.?
So the oils are addressed in the ABS water quality unit, and then they also, in the tank systems, have an isolator row, where the first row is wrapped in fabric. Basically, it'll remove the 80% you get in the ABS water quality unit, which they'll pump those out and make the tissues there. Then the rest goes through an isolator row before it goes into the main set of tanks for storage of volume, and that'll get the remainder of the sediment. So I'm not sure if I'm hearing your question correctly, but there's several different ways that they're addressing both pre-treatment for the first flush and an additional sediment.
Yeah, see, I can see and understand what they're trying to do. I do think that that being the headwater and getting that close to the creek.
What provision has been made to clean those things out? I mean, eventually, I can just imagine that there will be solid sediment that takes place here, and then many people will flood that. So how will all that garbage stuff be, taken out, away, and how?
So as part of your stormwater permit, they're required to do maintenance.
Yeah.
And part of that includes checking head basins, cleaning them when needed, checking the isolator row, cleaning that when needed, making sure that the exact way on every capsule makes sense. And then every 3 years, they have to have an engineer certified as working as designed and as implemented.
And how much enforcement is there?
How much enforcement?
Enforcement.
So they do submit those if it isn't submitted. We don't get a designer certification, we don't get we have a maintenance checklist where they check off no maintenance and they give a maintenance schedule. If they don't follow that, then we follow up. The majority of the time they're done. Sometimes it does take a little bit of prodding to get them to do the maintenance, but there is enforcement if they don't do what they're doing.
Was that?
Before in the early 2000s.
the Crescent Landing Report basically documented that the engine barn that was supposed to be built was never constructed, and other things were being done to come. You have, but they all know the internet, so you know this, yeah, you're dependent on people saying truthful things to you. You're the old W office, you know, the check, to see what they're saying.
We're asking engineers to certify with their professional license that they're, you know, that they're truthfully submitting. There's major questions. I think early on in the program, there was a learning curve on both sides, but I feel confident more recently that system is working a lot better. There were a couple of accidents, and, you know, is it perfect? No, but I think it's a lot better now than it was. You know, again, there are some folks that will certify when the system is not maintained, that we're working on the elimination.
So there's currently an important protocol that's starting to work. What are you saying?
Well, I'd say that it works pretty well now. I think early on in the program history, you know, there wasn't that attention to detail of the new program. People were, you know, either figuring it out or avoiding the system, but I think now it works much better. There were some high-profile closings that were stopped because the permit was not in place correctly. It hadn't been certified, and then there were some engineers. It's not really occupancy to sell the you know, and the DeMont can do, or Hannah can do a much better job of explaining this than I can, but, you know, to complete the sale, the permits need to be in place. And valid, and they weren't, and some sales got stopped as a result of that. I think that probably did as much.
The lawyers are facing
right.
Well, I think there's one person in this room who believes that you would shut down 40,000 square foot operating supermarket if there was a malfunction in a sophisticated system, and it sounds pretty sophisticated. And I know from recent related history that I'm part of the majority that is fairly skeptical that there would be any either prompt or absolute response. When these things get up and going, and we're relying on high tech technology in very changing climate conditions, which you probably haven't seen the word. I don't think we're going to have any followers.
Sure.
I just have a quick question. My name is Carl Ball. It sounds like the engineers will certify that maintenance is done and things like that. When the system's in place, will there be water quality testing? And if yes, how often he does the test, who gets the results? It seems like your permit's going to say whatever they're going to do, the quality of the water leaving the property will meet X, Y, and Z standards. Who measures that? How do you make sure it's actually happening? Which is a very different question than sending out filters or the maintenance from the engineer. Who takes water samples and tests for whatever oils and that? I think that's really important to answer. And if you do grant this permit, I hope you build in some real strong requirements on what's being tested. If it fails, I hope you ask the applicant to have the resources to basically rip out the vehicle and put it back into the status that it's in now. If everyone does believe the experts, then there's lots of experts. There's lots of projects you can point to. The experts are wrong, and you're trying to make a value judgment. So put some pressure on the applicant to say, okay, our experts are right, but if they're wrong, we'll have to do excellent. You can't unpave that without a lot of money. And paving that whole property, there's no other pavement somewhere else that disappears. So you're just stressing the system, which right now is broken, and nobody's able, the governor and the legislature, there's no money to fix it. They can't find the best way to fix it is not continuing to break it, and this project will only add more stress and break it more unless it's perfect. And I think intuition of people here is probably not going to work. So your job is to only say yes if you really believe it will work, and if it's not going to work, then you need to go back to square one.
So with what we call innovative systems that aren't in our manual, for an innovative, for a new technology, something that's never been done before, there is testing associated with it. The way our stormwater permitting system works is there's a design manual of systems that have been independently tested and shown to work. So the requirement to get a stormwater permit in this state is that you design the system to the specifications in the manual. So it's a design-based certification. So there isn't that the difficulty in testing stormwater systems is a high degree of variability in terms of the input conditions. So the state-of-the-art nationally is that you design a system to a certain set of specifications, and that's the permit criteria, as opposed to like a wastewater treatment facility where there's ongoing effluent testing. Yeah.
Well, I guess I'd just like this to follow up and see if I'm right, is that as long as the permit team is complying with the conditions of their permit, they are in compliance.
That's right.
When Patrick Wilson will apply any water becomes impaired, this stormwater, it becomes the responsibility of the citizens of the taxpayers of that town to deal with it. The town has, does the town have any ability to ask the state to help us and see whether all we can do as a town is make sure that those checkboxes have been checked and that they're using those performance checks? Because that does nothing to protect our water quality. And so this is an example of where everybody's getting their permits, and a permit is issued, it's getting one step closer to ensuring that Patrick Wolf will be coming here. And I think this is an opportunity to say, let's let that wetland function the way it is and not move us a step closer towards impairment.
Sure.
I'm still a little confused. You're talking about the system of the oil and whatever, the 20%. Whatever the standards are that you've accepted, is that comparison that you strip 80%, let's say, for example, is that the comparison to the water that's now coming off that property to the rest of the government, 0%, or do you measure the water coming off the parking lot and then strip so much as that? I don't know whether I'm making sense here or not, but it just seems like you've got these small wetlands there. They're probably functions that I would imagine that the water, since it is an isolated, some people disagree with that, wetland, the water probably is filled with fuel coming off of there, or of the food site, and it should be the water that's there. So you have this water that's fairly innocuous going into the back of the whatever it is, but some of it may get a fuel. Then have a whole different water quality when it's runoff. What is basically the problem? Part of what I'm concerned with. So you're talking about that your cleansing system will bring this within 20% of the water that went there before, or you just take the water that comes off the parking lot and say you strip it to that, which is not. Seems like there's an awful lot still going out of it. I think that's what Andrew is getting at. Because the permit system is so screwed up that you can get the shelter from the ferry system. They have permit after permit. All that work. The water jet is now polluted. And you know, what's going on? I mean, somehow the system seems to be broken. And it's up to you guys to do exactly what you
Not
be before
you create
a new, you know, any little bit now, you can
require light boxes and say, you can't just walk all up here and use it like a couple of people on the foot. Whatever, you find ways to make this system work. Because who cares? Who knows?
I'm going to take advantage of the opportunity we're all here and you're stuck every evening. There is a misimpression that the 401 certification is the same as the stormwater permit. It's not. The stormwater permit that you've been discussing and all those right here, you're all familiar with, and bring the state very familiar with, and it is designed based. Water quality certification is not designed based. Water quality certification is the product of the Federal Clean Water Act. It's not a product of state law. And the department has issued a protocol for how to address water quality certification under the Federal Clean Water Act. And it does not say, if you qualify for a stormwater permit, you qualify for a water quality certification. It does not say that. There are additional standards that so far have not been addressed by ANR in this case. For example, there has to be showing by the applicant that there are no proven alternatives. There has to be an alternative analysis submitted. It wasn't. So in two high profile cases that went to the federal court in the last year involving water quality certification, involving a big interstate gas pipeline, one in New York and one in Connecticut, the DDC in New York and DDC in Connecticut rejected the interstate gas pipeline because the alternative analysis submitted by the pipeline company wasn't adequate. And the court of appeals upheld that. This is a tiny, tiny, tiny little version of that, but the law should be the same.
If I could just put in a final plug, and request that you really raise the bar on openness and transparency. And I know that there will be other hearings down the road on this, maybe we can see the but and I am not especially in integrity of anyone who's sitting at this table by any means. But you know, as you were explaining the decision of the process, for all I know, you know, the secretary had a phone call with his wife 2 weeks ago and the decision was already made. I just don't know because none of that is open. You know, maybe a couple of, you know, employees with a drug around the water cooler, you know, looked at one testimony and then another. I don't know. I just don't have that information. And that's why I really urge you to raise the bar on
transparency. Can you just clarify Jim's point about alternatives analysis? Is one required and hasn't been submitted?
The Army Corps, when they look at the 404, they do what's called a lead test, where they look at alternatives. We are through our wetland permit program because it's a class 3, not a class 2. We just get to the alternatives analysis and the wetland component of it, and for the stormwater discharge component of it. Again, it's a design-based standard, so we can address that further in our written comments, lay out exactly what our logic was there.
Okay, but it didn't require an alternative analysis.
The water quality certificate protocol that's published by DEC does have an alternative component to it.
The water quality standard?
Yes. Different from pressure from the wetlands, different from what the Army Corps of Engineers does. The Army Corps alternative analysis is binding on them. Your water quality certificate tracks is binding on you. It's different and it hasn't been done in this case. The application issue doesn't address it. In my reading of the rule, it should have been dismissed and complete from the get-go. And alternative analysis, as you know, is generally considered the heart of environmental review. And in your protocol. On the application. So why are we here? visit.
I mean, you guys will, you know, we'll address that with our written comments.
Yeah. Hi, my name is Sarah Lombard. I've lived here, I don't know, for 45 years or so. I am no expert, and I can't speak very specifically to probably what you are looking at, but I would just like to say to you that it is a question of scale, and that the scale obviously is to the wetlands, and it's to for many other factors as well. And for some reason, Hanford was unwilling to adjust the size of its store. And this is a district size store, 36,000 square feet size district in Williston. You know, half foot in Burlington. It has scale for a small town. And I think it has impact across the board. And this is one of the places to impact. So I have no problem with any grocery store going into Huntsburg or Commerce Park. We have more commerce, but this is a district store, not a town store. And that's my issue, and that's my issue.
Seeing no other hands, again, thank you all for coming out tonight. We've captured all of your comments, both in writing and in recording. We'll make a list of those questions, grouping where we can, but listing all of the questions and comments we receive. We'll respond to those. The comment period, again, stays open through Monday at close of business. So if you think of additional things that you'd like to send us or clarifying comments, please do that. And then we will get back to you. If you haven't had an opportunity to leave your email address for us and you would like to, please do before you leave. That way we'll make sure we get you that information. And again, thank you all very much for coming up.
Thank you.
Thank you for very comfortable
all. Thank you for your comment. It's something we should try to do better at.
I didn't know that it was really possible. This would be awful.
I was having a hard time hearing some of the questions. So, yeah.
I'm more than willing to
do that.
I'm a fan.
Yes, right.
Or do we go for it?
Let's see if that question is asked. It's a legitimate question. I mean, the purpose of tonight, we were trying to do four attempts and that's what we can. But what I'm saying is the real point was for...